Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, and welcome to another episode of Voices for Excellence. I am your host, Dr. Michael Connor, CEO and founder of the Agile Evolutionary Group, and of course, the proud host of VFE. And today's guest, you can tell by my smile, this individual is dear to my heart. Now, to my VFE audience, yes, I speak to this individual every day. Every day. I would say with the exception of Saturday and Sunday, but I want to make that call. People that know me, but they're like, retract on the work. But we talk every single day. And Matt Modgen is a friend, is a brother, a close confidant, someone that I lean on in the edtech and education space. Matt Modgen has over 25 years of experience in education, working at the executive level for Education 500 companies, have been providing support throughout his years to leaders across this country, education stakeholders that has an invested interest in raising the bar for all of our students. And Matt and I, we have been doing some innovative adventures. And then, of course, Matt has created his highly, and I do mean highly successful company at Infuse EDU. We're going to talk about that today, but it is with an absolute an honor, just a complete honor to have one of my dear friends, education cadres, cadre as well as colleague within the field, Mr. Matt Modgen, the CEO and proud, I should say, CEO and founder of Infuse EDU. Good brother.
Good brother. Wow, we should just stop the podcast now. And by the way, you can call me Saturday or Sunday. You are dear. You are my brother. So that doesn't matter, right? Like anytime we can talk is a good talk. So I'm humbled and thank you for letting me be part of Voices for Excellence today.
Oh, come on, Matt. I mean, literally. And when we say to my audience, when we say good brother, Matt picks up the phone and he says, good brother. And I'm like, good brother. And then we just dip right into our conversation. But I wanted to bring Matt on today because, A, this is a very, very important topic that we're going to cover, which is edtech in the education space. Two, what does equity look like in the edtech space? And we have one of the experts, and I'm not just saying this subjectively, but objectively, one of the experts that are leading edtech startups, Education 500 companies and corporations, edupreneurs, as we say, education entrepreneurs in the field, and also product development and design. Matt has been one of the strategic advisors to many, many CEOs and founders throughout this company on how to leverage excellence and equity with product design development as well as execution. One of the few companies across the country, I can say, that has an equity rubric so that now the conversations are level set when it comes to any thread or any apparatus within an ed tech organization. We're going to talk about that today. But Matt, good brother, first question. This is going to be a fun question. I can't wait. I can't wait to see what your response is. But of course, Matt, thank you, because you have been in the education ecosystem for over 25 years with various leadership roles in the edtech space. But for my audience that don't know you or do not know about Infuse EDU, what song? I'm sorry, I'm laughing because, brother, I apologize. But what song describes your excellence in equity work that leverages sustained outcomes for all? Let's go, Matt. I'm ready for this.
I love this question, Dr. Connor. I love this question, Michael. I think it's awesome, but I have to ask, as a brother, I need two songs.
Listen, you got to go. Got two.
I'm feeling a little angry. So one side of me, I feel I have an urgent need, and I'm calling anybody that's listening to this podcast or watching. We need to have an ally, and a stronger call for allies, right? We need this allyship, and we need to support those leaders who are like dedicated to supporting all their kids, including those students that are living in the most disadvantaged and marginalized communities. And those leaders are finding themselves up against it, right? There's a machine dedicated to removing them from this work. We're seeing leaders like yourself, others, not in the superintendency. And that for that song, I'm thinking of Public Enemy. I'm thinking of Fight the Power. And that's playing in my head, right? So that song, I think, is right there with me. And that might date me a little bit, but that's that song. The other song, though, the other side of me, the optimist side of me, the side that you and I also work along, I think of Stevie Wonder's Sir Duke. And
Yes.
yes, right? So he talks about music as a world within itself, with a language we all understand, with an equal opportunity for all to sing, dance, and clap their hands. So what if we took that music, that term music, interchanged it with education? And then he talks about later on, like all the greats, like Basie and Satchmo and Ella and Sir Duke. What if we put in Dr. Connors, Dr. Spence, Dr. White, Dr. Gordon, Dr. Einfeld, Dr. Brown, all of them, right? Put them on, and the list goes on. But you get the picture of what we could do with that. So those are the two songs that are in my head right now.
Absolutely, Matt. Thank you. One, right, when we talk about this strong call for allyship, very intentional how you use that word allyship, because you're right, Public Enemy, Fight the Power. We are seeing a transition of leaders at this alarming rate, right? And when I just attended, Matt, as you know, I was in Las Vegas at the Urban Superintendents Collaborative, and the superintendent shared some messages that he received over the course of, I believe, a 60 to 90 day period because of the work that he was doing with regards to leveraging culture responsive systems and representation within his district. And he played the messages for us. And it was just absolutely alarming and disgusting on the with the message that he received. So how do we now continue to fight the power against this machine where I like to say there's this tension of recognizing the demographics and sociographics in our schools where we have to change the model versus people that want to continue to have this complicit, standardized, mainstream model that doesn't address all. So that's where we're seeing now this tension, and good leaders are leaving the field. But like you said, optimism with Sir Duke by Stevie Wonder and how we can continue to build that allyship. Fight the Power and Sir Duke. Amazing contrast, but it is so true, Matt. And Sir Duke, I love that song. Just absolutely love Stevie Wonder. Absolutely love that song. But Matt, congratulations on starting your company.
Thank you.
You've been highly successful in the edtech space. The name of Matt's company is Infuse EDU, but moreover, you bring a divergent, and this is what's the differentiator, the innovation that is embedded within your company, in the context of your strategy, product solution development, and organizational structures to impact other edtech companies, as well as CEOs and founders who are trying to leverage the equity and excellence and innovation initiative that we see in the AC stage of education. But for my audience, right, for my audience who are CEOs of a startup, Education 500 company, or an executive or C-suite member of a corporation, what is the mission and the vision of Infuse EDU to support this vertical in the education ecosystem?
So our mission's really simple. We seek to find the best innovative, research-backed, and equity-centered instructional resources and professional learning and bring them to kids, right? We want to bring them to those kids that are in, to all kids, but especially those kids that are in marginalized communities and the educators that support them. So, we're working with founders and CEOs that are like-minded, that have that at their heart, that want to do that hard work. And we continue to work with them. So, if you're listening and you're a CEO and like, yeah, I want to make sure that my product and service, my professional learning, whatever it is, you want to bring that to those communities, let's talk, let's have that conversation, because that is the mission.
Absolutely, absolutely, Matt. And I'm proud to stand with you, stand with Infuse EDU, as well as your innovative and creative mind on your creating this arm of the Education Justice League. And oh man, I tell you, Matt, when I think about that creative arm that you created, and to my audience and out there for VFB, it is heavy weights that are part of this Infuse EDU team. But also, Matt, and I really want to start getting into this, right? Because this is what I love about your company and your work. And when you really talk about bringing solutions to students in awe, it's not just this subjective notion of what we think, but you measure it from
Yes.
the context of what I call the Infuse EDU. And this is one of the major differentiators within your company. So, but I want to talk about the structured rubric, okay, that measures product and organizational functionality against different indicators of equity. Matt, wow. Okay, so I
Yeah.
really, and I want to repeat that for my audience because being in the EdTech space and also ed leadership space, but now moving over to the siloed vertical around the EdTech space. To my education leaders out there, you do not see a rubric of this magnitude that brings this level set with regards to product and organizational threads, as well as tenets, to ensure that all aspects, coherence, right? This level of deep coherence, we're now is focused on ensuring that there's that equity twist that brings it into schools. Now, Matt, from a product design and creation level set lens, okay, because I just absolutely amazed of how you're leveraging this in the ecosystem. How does the Infuse EDU equity rubric and the elements of the Justice League provide edtech companies the necessary support to ensure that they, as well as startups, are moving towards excellence in schools?
Yeah, so the Justice League is our internal name. So we haven't taken it. We're not doing any type of copyright here, right? This is our internal acronym or reference. But we really are.
If I can interject, please, because yes, whoever is out there, please do
Yes.
not sue VFE. Okay, do not sue Dr. Michael Connor. This is just in what we call ourselves. We are not blasting that out there as the
That's
Justice
right. That's
League.
right. So
Clarification
thank
purposes.
you.
Go ahead, Matt.
That's right. So we need to clarify that up front. But we are a league of like-minded individuals. And what's really cool about all of this is that, when I set out to start Infuse EDU, I had no idea the direction that we were going to go. And I know that you and I, Michael, marvel at like just since January, where we've grown together. But it really is because of the expertise that we have on the team. So all of us have our own LLCs, but we all work together. And because of that, we have three former superintendents, one former deputy secretary of education, right? We have a brilliant mind in Max Brooks, and we bring all of those mindsets and that experience. Michael, when I was trying to add it up, I think we have over like 130 years or something like that of experience in
Wow.
education and in ed tech. Although ed tech hasn't been around that long, but you lump it all together, right? And so because of that that experience, we can and that alignment to a mission, we can scale rather quickly with our partners, but we also can give them insight that they hadn't thought of before, right? And so to help us stay aligned to that, we have this rubric that you've modestly haven't admitted to yet, but you've helped to refine as well. And that rubric is it is weighty, but it does help us, kind of work with our partners as they move across the spectrum, right? So it's got six components: equity, which is it's a big, broad scope. So we define that into different measures on a score of 1 to 4. Then we talk about diversity, but we don't look at just diversity for the sake of diversity. We look at how are companies diverse within themselves, And how are their products and services diverse? So does their output for kids match the kids that they're serving? We look at cultural humility as one of component, and that might be a term that people aren't familiar with as much as they are with cultural competency. And me, when I was putting this together, I was thinking, well, the word competent has a finality to it, right? You become competent and then you're done. But you and I know that we're never fully competent, right? We're always learning, right? And so that's where cultural humility is. Can I continually be learning and reflect the context and the culture that I'm working with? I'll give you an example. I have been doing equity work for or trying to do the equity work. I read and I listen and I learn from others. But there are things that I didn't know. So one time I was at a conference not too long ago, working with one of our phenomenal founders. She's a Black founder of Kai XR. I was carrying her bag at a conference, and I put it down on, we were resting, and I put it down for like a second on the floor while I was getting her a seat. And I didn't realize that, like, you never put a Black woman's bag on the floor, right? Like, and I got corrected by Ingrid, who's the chief equity officer in Fairfax County, right? And I didn't do that. I didn't know like what I was doing, but I learned, right? And that's part of that cultural humility in my journey, right? So I'll never do that again. But I also didn't know the local context, right? And the cultural context. So that was something that I had to learn about. But it made me stronger, it made me understand more, and led me into a conversation about like what else am I missing, right? So that cultural reflection about me and what can I continue to learn. Social impact and research round out the other two pieces. The research really is tied to the ESSA, the ESEA tiers, right? And then the other piece, the social impact piece, is really around like how are, if we're going to take from a community in the form of funds, right? We're going to take money from a school district. How are we putting back into that same community? And that putting back doesn't necessarily mean money back. It could be jobs. It could be, community work, whatever. And then how are we challenging the vendors that support us to have that social impact? So really, that's that. Those are the points in the rubric that we use, and we work. Just because you're, maybe scoring a four doesn't mean that you can't get to a 16, and we work along those rubric to do that.
Matt, love the rubric. Was love. I love being a part of the feedback and actually helping and assisting the language, developing the language with this. Thank you for inviting me into this, right? Because this is important, and I think what distinguishes you from any other company is this equity rubric, because now you're looking at every single tenet and thread within an edtech company to ensure that there's alignment for delivery of services for our students and learning organizations throughout the nation. But Matt, I want to highlight on, and this is a sub question, highlight on two of the indicators within the rubric that I want you to expand upon, right? Because you are 100% correct, both objectively and subjectively stating this with regards to cultural humility, right? I love the definition, or I should say the theme that you highlight is competency means completed. And when we look at humility in this context of continuous learning, right? Can you expand on product and services in the context of cultural humility for edtech companies as well as CEOs and founders? Because again, this is new learning in the edtech space, especially now when you hear, I like to say key buzzwords or key buzz phrases. Cultural competence is one, right? But is used in context and vernacular, but is it really underscored within the organization and realized within the delivery of products and services? So can you map for our CEOs, startup founders, edtech companies, C-suite leaders, can you just expand on cultural humility, that indicator within the Enfuse EDU rubric?
Yeah. So one, to all of those people that you just mentioned, thank you for making products to make to help our kids, right? That's important. But are you making products because you thought, man, this would be a great idea and I can make a lot of money? Or are you making a product that reflects what that cultural context of where the students are learning?
Absolutely.
So are you working? So one of those pieces of that component is, are you working in partnership with the LEA, right? Or the district? Are you there shoulder to shoulder with those educators in the classroom? Are you talking to the superintendent and identifying ways that still hold true to your product, but refine your product so that you meet the needs and the vision of that district and that leader, right? So the leader is responsible to the board, so they're a reflection of that community. How are you helping that community? And then reflecting on yourself, like, what are you learning, right? I shared this story and I was vulnerable to you on this podcast because that was an aha moment for me. Well, if I was creating a product, how is that then learn, how is that impacted on the product that I'm creating or the product design? So we work along those lines in the rubric, in the cultural humility lens, right? So one is just, are you doing the research, right?
Yeah.
Are you looking like the communities that you're trying to serve? And they all are different, right? Every community has a different context, but are you looking at some ways that you can support? And then are you inviting those stakeholders in? Right? Are you having round tables? Are you having lunch and learns? Are you celebrating those communities and educators, right? Are you constantly doing that, right? Are you getting surveys back? Things change, context change, products change. So how are you taking that feedback? And then, what are you doing as far as allowing the products or solutions or services that you have to adapt. So change over time. Because again, we're never going to be completely competent and no product is the silver bullet. We know that in education. We know that no one product can do everything. So how are you continually using that information to get better?
And Matt, so critical, right? Because when I think about product design, when I think about this level of iterating various features and functionalities of products, we have to take in consideration the new demographic in the AC state of education, where within the next 2 years, the forecasted demographic percentage is that 57% of our students are going to be Black and brown. So this level of cultural humility in the context of not just isolated structures and systems in education, but moreover, the ancillary or external entities that support teaching and learning, that support innovative and creative structural designs, as well as systems integration and frameworks, is the product. So it has to be this cultural alignment between the shift in demographics, the needed shift that we're seeing in education structures and systems, but moreover, the work that you're presenting that in the context of supporting education technology companies, as well as education 500 companies with regards to product design, where that level of cultural humility, you're integrating an important implicit node, Matt, which is around continuous learning. And that is so critical in the education sector. And Matt, because again, forgive me, because this is more subjective. I really want to expand on this rubric because I think these are the missing elements that are needed from an integration, redesign, and product development, as well as organizational strategy standpoint. These contexts or these different indicators within this rubric. What I haven't seen in the ed tech space that you're bringing, and I want you to expand on, and I apologize for expanding on this question, is social impact.
Yes.
Wow. Right. And Matt, I haven't heard social impact used in the ed tech space on a regular basis. And what I mean by this, for level setting with my BFE audience, social impact in the context of our communities, in the context of our families, as well as providing this level of, I like to say, triangulation between communities, learning organizations, and the entity, the company in itself, working in unison, very much aligned to the inclusive triangle. Matt, can you highlight, please, because this is new learning for a lot of people, social impact in the ed tech space?
Yeah. So when I set out to put this together, I wanted to figure out, like, who do I want to be, right? And how do I want to work? And I'm just one person. I can't affect a movement. I can't change the world. But if we can incent others alongside me or others, right, we can start to create a movement. And social impact's part of that. How are we going to incent and leverage our own goodwill to really help communities build capacity?
Yeah.
And one way to do that is by, you know, asking the companies that we're working with, and we're blessed, Michael, to work with early stage, right? These people are still thinking and forming their companies to think socially about social impact, right? Yeah. As funds diminish, as resources get tighter, how are the companies giving back to the communities? And I know, and I believe this to my very core, Michael, that if you do well by community, by family, by schools first, not Absolutely. Yourself first, but do well by them first, you will Absolutely. Do well, right?
Absolutely.
Everything will be taken care of. So on a social impact rubric, are you donating resources? Are you not taking, are you not just taking, are you giving as well as, you know, receiving funds, right? So are you opening up doors to close that opportunity gap, right? Can your company have internships for kids? Can your company provide access to other people coming from that community to work there, right? Are you taking on a campaign as a company to spur the social impact idea, right? Sometimes it's like start a campaign to raise something in the community, raise awareness, raise funding, raise goods, raise, like, you know, turn a desert into an oasis, right? So can you do that? Are you providing scholarships or donating sort of resources to educational foundations? We know that a lot of school districts have nonprofit education foundations that are raising money for that community and for those kids. So are you working with them? That's another part of that social impact. And then really the challenge part really is that are you requiring people that serve you, your vendors, are you requiring them to also have a social impact? Like, you're giving money to HubSpot or to Salesforce or to whatever, you know, campaign, whatever resource you're using. How are you asking them to give back to the communities that you serve? So, you know, that's way on the other side of the rubric, right? That's really hard to do. But that's kind of what the thinking behind that social impact piece.
Yeah, Matt, thank you. Compelling and profound, right? That's strategic performance management, as I always state. You made a comment that resonates with me, Matt, that I've been saying in the ed tech space, and it creates, I like to say, this level of cognitive dissonance with CEOs. When I was a superintendent, I always used to, even when I was a chief academic officer, I always used to say, let's not focus on the scores, but let's focus on what we do in our schools and our classrooms, and the scores will take care of itself.
Yeah.
There was that level of dissonance at first, you know, with my leaders in the two where I was CAO and superintendent. But once we started to shift the mental models to really focus on improving our practices, improving Our systems, scores took care of itself. You stated earlier, Matt, that when we focus on the community and when we focus on the students and the teachers, the money will take care of itself. It will support the company. Not the focus on money and building this product, but the focus on how we can have collective impact, which will automatically take care of itself, where we'll see more districts jumping on. And I think that once we take that very there's that alignment, right? There's that alignment from not focusing on the scores in the education space. We're now not just focusing on our profit margins in the ed tech, but how are we impacting, which will impact our profit margins to become even higher. Thank you for that, because when I think of social impact, that is an outlier practice for a lot of organizations. But you are pushing those startups to close opportunity and access gaps. Truly appreciate the work that you're bringing, Matt, into the education ecosystem. But I want to ask you this question, right? And I want you just to give a definition, right? Definition around innovation and equity from an ed tech company and a startup focused on solutions, right? On closing specific educational gaps that we see within the ecosystem that we're trying to address strategically through this coalition work. But Matt, define innovation and equity in the context of impact to accelerate outcomes.
Man, I think answering that question, I would be Dr. Manjan, right? That's a doctorate. I think that is something that maybe I need to work with you to publish, because that is a good question. And I need a second to digest that. But I think it boils down to how are companies considering how they increase access and opportunity, right? How are companies breaking down geographical barriers and those forces, as Max, my colleague Max Brooks talks about, and how are they bringing high quality educational resources to those underserved areas, and those and are they flexible, right? Are they opening options so that students, so teachers can diverse to differentiate to those different needs. So we talked a lot about different communities, but every student brings their personality, brings their learning styles, brings all the other trauma that, and things that and good things that have happened to them to form their learning opportunity, right? So how is a product giving a teacher the opportunity to differentiate so that the students have access and opportunity to the learning? I would think that part of that definition would also have to include data-driven insights, right? If we're truly going to do well by schools first, then we have to show that the efficacy. And so are companies offering platforms that can analyze the data on performance, on also on resiliency? We're working with a partner that is considering that resiliency, right? But that data-driven approach would really be important in part of that definition. And then I think like the last component of that would be really, are we empowering educators? And not just the ones that are in the classroom, but all the wraparound educators and the leaders, right? How are we empowering them with the tools so that they can focus on those relationships with kids and provide that personalization? So I don't know if that's a definition or just pieces of a definition,
Dr. Majin, I'm gonna call you Dr. Majin, good brother.
but
Spot on, because when we think about innovation and equity, and I love the key themes that you highlighted within your answer, right? Access and opportunity. When we think about innovation and equity concretizes access and opportunity for all. Data-driven insights, that's I like to say a meta-ruptor that needs to be a part of the conversation, that's guiding the conversation, whether it be descriptive prescriptive or even catalytic, those focuses on that, where now evolutionary, from this evolutionary context, innovation is creating equity within these solutions. But Matt, I appreciate you saying this, empowering educators. I am a firm believer that we have to provide the necessary capacity to be able to empower people to elevate the vision. Because you stated at the outset, not one person can do it, right? And the old saying, it takes a village to raise a child, and this is where the village come in, but we have to empower the village in order to do the work. But high quality educational resources and organizations being flexible. To my audience that is out there, and if you're a new CEO of a startup, or if you're a CEO of an existing ed tech company or even Education 500 company, I can tell you this, this is objectively and subjectively stating this, is that you have to have a conversation with Matt Modgen, and a shout out to Max Brooks, another individual who is really making great changes within the education paradigm for ed tech companies, as well as Education 500 incumbent companies, as I like to say. Please just have an initial conversation with either of these individuals, because again, you won't look at your company in the same manner. And I'm saying this from a positive or asset mindset lens, because it's challenging your existing nodes of your company to be able to go deeper to reach all, right? It's, I like to reference Matt, Professor Michael Tushman's work, that we have to continuously exploit and explore, exploit our archetype, exploit our prototype, and exploration, intentional exploration, to be able to continue to iterate around the edges. But Matt, if I'm a new CEO, or if I want to start this new company as a startup, or if I'm a entrepreneur per se, right? And I want to focus on successful relationships with superintendents and education stakeholders from various learning organizations. What advice would you give me as I'm going in and I'm meeting a Dr. Manjin who is superintendent X, or Dr. Manjin who is the CAO, Chief Academic Officer, Assistant Superintendent of Teaching and Learning for Y? What is maintaining a good relationship, and how is this defined through what I like to say, strategic partnerships?
So probably part two of the doctorate, right? I think there's a lot that goes into that, but I think that's also why we've been so successful as a as an organization. And I would say that's because we're authentic and mission driven, right? So we represent who we are unabashedly, and we really sit down with leaders to understand their vision, right? So a lot of listening first before speaking, and then really leaning into that doing well by schools and districts first. If you do those things, then that relationship piece is going to come along, right? Because we're there to help the superintendent and his or her vision, but we're doing it in the service of kids. And so if you're a leader within a school district, I mean, that's what you're concerned about, right? Regardless of where you are at the site level or all the way up at the district level. And if you can show that and be there as a support and as a cheerleader and as a counselor and as all those other things, that will help with those relationships and drive that authenticity, right, that is needed.
Absolutely. And Matt, thank you. Right. Because I know when I was a superintendent and I was evaluating various products, right, various solutions, one, I wanted that potential partner to understand our core priorities, our strategic priorities within the district. How are we going to be able to leverage those specific instructional and operational imperatives? But exactly what you stated, that authentic relationship with me and the other stakeholders within the teaching and learning organization. And that's where, Matt, I think that sometimes there can be, I like to say, a divide of is this organization or is this potential edtech partner doing this for the quote unquote money? Or are they really in this to elevate the vision and really be immersed in this ethnographic approach in my community to ensure that there's that level of social impact and cultural humility with their product? And that comes through relationships, right? Dr.
Right.
Bill Daggett always talked about it. He reversed it within his rigor relevance framework, where now relationships leads to relevance. I believe it's relationships. It's not rigor relevance and relationships anymore. Is relationships relevance and rigor and relationships as that key priority thread in order to elevate any product, any solution, or any outcomes. But Matt, last question, good brother. You made it.
Yeah.
You
Yeah.
made
Woo.
it to the
I do want to say though, we've been helping you. I can't teach you how to be authentic, right?
EFA.
Authentic is authentic, right? But we have been working with our EdTech partners on things that you need to components that you need to do include in as you build your outreach, not just your relationships, but all your outreach. So we've been synthesizing that down into some key components and some key courses. That can be taken asynchronously. They're not going to teach you how to be the most authentic person ever, right? That's on you. But those are components. There are components that all districts need and what to look out for. So we're putting those together into some courses. So that's pretty cool too.
And Matt, I apologize. I failed to highlight that earlier in the podcast. But yes, this is another differentiator that I completely forgot to bring this up. That yes, Infuse EDU run important courses for CEOs at tech companies as well as Education 500 companies. Can you just elaborate on your course sequence and series that you created?
Yeah, so we're still working on them, and Michael and I, you and I are we're collaborating together on the relationship piece, which will have a simulator, like things like just don't come ask me what my budget is, right? But we've released one about understanding funding streams through the lens of partnership, so understanding like what a superintendent is going through, or what a district leader is going through, a CAO, or what a principal is going through different parts of the year, so that you can show up and be your authentic self and be that partner, as well as do good by them first and do well later, right? Do well in tandem. So that's the first course that we've released.
Absolutely. And any of my viewers, CEOs, ed tech startups, please even C-suite leaders who engage with educational leaders within learning organizations, this is a great one-on-one to be able to access this. At the end of our podcast, Matt, there'll be time for you to give out your email, social media links and everything so that they'll be able to contact you with regards to how can they access those specific courses. Yes, you're building those courses out, but the first course is such a mainstay and so important. And it shifts beyond technical and domain expertise around sales, around establishing, what this looks like, going into a district, but it's more strategic partnerships and relationships. That's why I asked that question. Very,
Right.
very important, Matt. Thank you, brother. But last question, and this might be hard. So, we had a course of superintendents, leaders across the ed tech space who very, very intimately. And this question poses a problem because I only limit the individual to three words. Now, we have a lot of rule breakers that have showed up, right? It's three and innovation and creativity that's embedded within this. So, as I state to everybody, good brother, take this question as it is, okay? But what three words, only three words, do you want our audience today to leave with regarding AI, innovation, and equity in the AC stage of education?
Oof. All right, so authenticity has to be one. Partnership. And can I hyphenate a word to make it one word?
Innovative is all you want, brother.
I think mission driven, right?
Yeah.
Those would be the pieces that you can weave all those other pieces under.
Can you elaborate, Matt? Because those
Yes.
are
All right.
three important words. I always usually follow up. People stop, and then I'm like, you got to elaborate. You can't just leave
Okay,
it
so
like.
I think that like AI right now, it's this incredible tool, right? Or we're just getting started, right? So today, this moment, AI is the worst it's ever been, right? So it's exponentially growing.
Yes.
And because it's in this relative infancy, we have a chance to train it for good, right? So that's where that mission alignment, that's where the sort of cultural relevancy piece comes in. And if we can start to train that AI to incorporate these cultural relevant research and context that we talked about earlier, the local context, then the output should be good. So we've been lucky enough to work with founders around that, right? That mission driven piece, that partnership piece, I think are equally important.
Absolutely.
And because we're seeking to understand first through both those pieces, the partnership and the mission alignment, we're also going to start to think about, how can we help in the AI context, our districts help their students think about how can those students become even more critical thinkers, right? So just because AI gives us some information, it doesn't really mean that it's gospel. So how can we work all together along this mission of equity and access for all, so that we also are embedding a sense of curiosity in our kids that want help them dig deeper and validate the information they're receiving, and that, so that they have that skill and disposition to do that while we continually develop, right? And there's that cultural humility piece that continually develops. So there's my elaboration on those three words. Hopefully all fit together.
Absolutely. And Matt, just personally saying thank you, right? Because authenticity, partnership, and mission driven, that exudes who you are as an ed leader, as well as your work in the ed tech space and education ecosystem as well. That level of authenticity is so important. Partnership, but everything that we ground our work in. Has to be mission driven, every aspect of it. I always used to ask when we used to come up with certain things that we had to unpack and interrogate with depth and breadth. I always ask the question, is this good for kids? Right? And that's kept going back to, are decisions going to impact kids in a positive way where we know that it's mission driven. Matt, thank you so much. Thank you so much
Thank
for
you, Michael.
coming on, good brother. Really, really appreciate you. I appreciate everything you're doing in the space as well. That's why, I'm a huge partner, huge fan, as well as a friend and a brother to you. But for my CEOs, ed tech leaders, as well as other stakeholders within the ecosystem, if I want to look at my product, examine my organizational structures, cultural structures, or even product functionality in the context of whether it be the Infuse EDU work, rubric, whether it be your videos that are being developed, or more importantly, having domain experts come together in an interdependent manner to be able to address their specific business problems. How would they be able to get in touch with you, Matt?
So the you can email us at matt.monjan, MONJAN, at infuseedu.com. You can go to www.infuseedu.com and book a meeting there too. Or you can go look me up on LinkedIn. Let's connect together. Build our community together, and there's connections there as well. So LinkedIn, go direct to the website, give me a direct email, all that works. Talk to Michael. He can get you in the right direction too. But yeah, if there's a mission that this work that can be aligned to this mission, we're happy to talk.
Absolutely. And to my audience, and my viewers out there, please It's a good conversation. Get in contact with Matt. And I tell you, you'll come back for a second meeting. I can guarantee you of that because he will challenge you from a continuous learning standpoint, even if it's just an introductory call or exploratory call. So Matt Monjen, the CEO, founder of Infuse EDU. Thank you, good brother. You made it through
Thank you. That was awesome. I'll do it again anytime. You can call me
Are
on
you going to come
Saturday.
back? Trust me,
That's right.
there will be. We are planning to, and this is now unveiling on your show. We are planning our little mini EdTech month that we're going to have on VFE, and we're going to have a good roundtable where you're going to be invited, Matt. So that is
Awesome.
going to be
Look
coming
forward to it.
soon. Look forward to it. And on that note, onward and upward, everybody. Have a great evening.